Hey, before we dive in, I just want to talk to you about something. You know, I recently hired an intern, which, you know, huge power trip. But I got to tell you, it was a pain in the butt to find this person. I had to talk with a couple different schools. I had to fill out a whole bunch of applications. I had to go through a ton of candidates to find someone who I thought was really great. And by the way, shout out to Kaylee Raglan, who's been absolutely crushing it for me. She's doing an unbelievable job. But, you know, it took a lot of time to find her. And what I should have done is I should have just gone to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply for your job. ZipRecruiter makes hiring efficient and effective with features like screening questions to filter candidates and an all-in-one dashboard where you can review and rate your candidates. So you got to do this. You got to go to ZipRecruiter.com. And I'm going to give you a little tip because it's going to make me look good here. Go to www.ZipRecruiter.com/Zach. That's my name, Z-A-K. Make sure you spell it correctly. And check it out. If you need to hire someone, if you're looking to bring someone on board, don't waste time doing the usual recruiting nonsense. Go to ZipRecruiter.com and get the job done there. Okay, I'm done talking. I've talked way too long. Let's go. Here we go. Let's dive in.
The Zach Kuhn Show.
Episode 43, RJ Romeo and Brian Bauer. These are two guys who are at the top of their game. RJ runs Romeo Entertainment, which is one of the largest independent talent buyers for fairs, festivals, clubs, casinos, etc. And Brian runs Bauer Entertainment Marketing, which is one of the leading event marketing companies here in Nashville. These guys have a brand new partnership that we talk all about in this episode. We also talk about the future of live events and so much more. Look, I gotta say, whenever I get together with these guys, we basically have conversations that sound a lot like this. So I'm excited that you're able to tune in and check it out. And these guys are both super smart at what they do and have a ton of insight. So I can't wait for you guys to hear this episode. Here we go. I've talked way too long. Let's dive in.
Hey, you know, No Shave November is over, right?
You know, I was actually thinking, I was like, I bet he's going to give me shit for not shaving. I was thinking that as you were coming on. I know it's over.
It's all right.
It's all right.
Doesn't look as bad as some of the Zooms I've seen.
Okay, great. I got the haircut recently. That was bad when my hair was out of control and I finally got cut. You just weren't important enough for me to shave. Sorry, RJ.
Thanks. But hey, I appreciate your honesty.
What do you have behind you? Are those backstage passes?
Yeah, so I took shadow boxes and I took a bunch of the backstage passes from my years of working in the business and did a little art project. So like the middle one is ACMs, and then I've got rock. I got two rock ones and then two country ones, and I have a bunch more, so I need to make another one.
Is this the quarantine activity?
No, I did this one years ago, but I should have done it during quarantine. Instead, I've been reading books and rebooking all the things that, we had booked this year for 2021. So it's been interesting.
That's it. Brian, how are you, man?
Good, man. Hanging tough.
Wait, RJ, I want to know what books you're reading.
Oh, several of them. So there's a great negotiation book by Chris Voss. Yeah. Oh, I'm reading all sorts of books. I read the first six Jack Reachers, which, Lee Childs is an amazing writer. So read that. And then I've been reading, a really good one. Do you know who Donald Miller is?
No, I don't.
You need to try to interview him for your podcast. He has a company called StoryBrand. Or he wrote a book called Story Brand, and it's all about a different way of looking at marketing. In fact, it influenced me so much that we're going to change the way that we've been marketing starting in 2021, and we're really going to change like our tagline and how we think about marketing.
Wow. What is his message, or what sense is it going to alter your approach?
Yeah, so StoryBrand is all about, he comes at it from the approach of a movie. You know, what is compelling? What gets people to pay attention. And so he says you have to position the customer as the hero of the story. And all you are is the guide, right? Every great movie, and he uses Star Wars as an example. He talks about how you've got Luke Skywalker who's lost and doesn't know what he needs. And then he finds the guide. And then the guide gives him all the skills and the tools he needs to go and succeed and become the Jedi Master. And, wow. And when you think about that that storyline is consistent throughout a lot of, you know, the great stories. Right. And so he takes that, applies it to business and marketing and, you know, little things like for years, we've had our experience is the difference as our tagline. What does that mean? It doesn't communicate what we do. It communicates, you know, some competitive differentiation, but what we're going to change it to is, hey, we help you produce successful shows or concerts. And, yeah. And that immediately will communicate what we do, the essence of what we do and the service we provide. And then I've come up with, Eric and I came up with a great thing, REG. It's not just the acronym for our company, but now we are the Reputable Experience Guides. And our job is to guide our clients through the concert process.
I love it. I got to check this book out. And Never Split the Difference, I loved, by the way.
So good.
Because I love how Brian, have you read this book?
I did the audiobook of it. I went kind of the lazy route, but it's very, yeah, it was very good. I use that stuff all the time. Yeah, you know, it's even in email format when we do like outreaching stuff, it's how do you get them to say no first instead?
That's his thing.
That stuff is brilliant. I love it.
You get them to say no first. And I love when he'll start off with like all these like intense, like high stakes negotiation cases. And then he'll be like, and here's how you use that in your job or whatever.
I keep getting retargeted his masterclass on Facebook. And I'm inches away from committing. But
I know seen the ads for his masterclass also. And I'm I'm kind of obsessed with this guy. And I loved, I just got a lease for a car. And there's a section at the end about how to negotiate a car lease. And I was referencing mm-hmm. that as I was negotiating my lease.
So that's, I gotta be honest, that's one of my favorite things to do ever is negotiate for cars. So this is my approach, and it's worked amazingly. I look at all of the emails for around a 200 mile radius. I know which car I want first, right? You gotta know what you want. And then I will put them all on CC. So they all see each other. And then I say, this is what I want. These are the specs, my required specs. Here's an example of another similar comparable car and how much they cost. Basically fight over me. And I don't respond. I don't include my phone number. I don't include anything. It's email only at first. And it's unbelievable. I swear I've gotten thousands of dollars off on cars because of that approach. So highly recommended if you go, your next car.
Wait,
I'll give you my script too.
So I'm actually not even joking. I swear to God, I actually did that for this. But what I did is I found two people and I emailed two people at two different dealerships. And I basically said that. And one of them wrote back and he said, look, that's not how we play. If you want to give me a call, I'd be happy to talk to you on the phone. The other one wrote back and said, this is the best price I can do. And then I sent the first guy an email. I said, look, the other guy said this. So either beat it or we're done here. And he said, okay, fine, I'll beat it. And I got an amazing price.
There you go. I'm telling you, it really works. And then the end of the month thing also definitely works because they've got their quotas. And I'm going in, our one of our cars is just the AC went. And there's no way we can make another summer with no AC. So I'm waiting for December 31st, and I think we're gonna pick up something else. So,
God, I love it.
I'm looking forward to repeating my process here soon.
This is so much more than a music podcast. We're giving a car lease or car buying negotiation tips.
That's right.
RJ, I'm so excited.
We started, by the way.
We technically have started. We technically are recording. We're just in it. We're just gonna flow. RJ, I'm really excited to be talking with you right now because I think it's been a minute since we spoke last. And last time we were speaking, we were trying to talk about when our concert's going to be coming back. And obviously we were thinking we had no idea and no clue. now we have a vaccine that's obviously been announced, and then we're going to talk about this really exciting partnership between you two guys. But now I'm curious, in your mind, when do you think concerts are coming back now? Do you have any sense of it?
Yeah, so I just did a panel the other day for the IAFE, the International Association of Fairs and Expositions. And on that one, I said my crystal ball tells me late June 2021 is when we can probably at the earliest expect to have like concerts at a decent scale. I think there will be some concerts before that, because people forget there were concerts this year. You know, even though there were industry prognosticators saying nothing until 2022, there were shows that happened this year, right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, some took precautions, some didn't. So there are going to be shows next year, and there's going to be more than there were this year. I just believe that it'll be easier for county health inspectors or county health departments to sign off on big mass gatherings once you know everyone's got access to the vaccine. I think the bigger question, and Brian and I talked about this earlier today, is whose responsibility is it to make sure that people are vaccinated or not? And are these county health departments going to put the pressure on event producers and say, yeah, we'll sign your permit, but you need to make sure everybody that comes in is either vaccinated or tested or somehow segregated so that we don't have an outbreak? Or will they just throw all the guidelines out the window once the vaccine's available to everybody? That's what we don't know.
It's city by city, state by state. It's so, it's beyond Wild West.
Yeah.
RJ, what you were saying earlier, like we did, we marketed a actual live festival in October of this year. And, you know, it was very interesting to say the least about, you know, how to present that experience to people to make it clear of all the safety precautions and everything. You know, I think they, you know, were very conscious about, social distancing, and it was our job to express that this is on, you know, thousands of acres or hundreds of acres of property, that there was just, you know, the experience with, you know, there were, sections that you have to wear your masks, and, you know, so they tried to strike that balance. It was a very, you know, kind of rural area where in many, is, you know, in for that audience, it's like almost nothing had happened. So it's so case by case. It's very, very strange.
Yep. Is that the, like, if you put on an event and then Corona breaks out of that event in 2021 or whatever, is that, can Romeo Entertainment Group be liable? Do you worry about that? How do you approach that?
So there's a bill in Congress right now that's going to provide some sort of safe harbor, but who knows if that'll pass. But we didn't see the onslaught of lawsuits, right? People thought there were going to be lawsuits, people suing everybody claiming they got COVID here, there, or wherever, but it didn't happen. And so I think the overreaction, if it didn't happen then during the height of it, I really don't think it's going to happen next year. So I'm not as concerned about the liability. I still think people should put the waivers in there when they buy the ticket and say, hey, look, this is out there. We're not responsible if you get it and you're entering the venue at your own risk, sort of thing. But at the end of the day, I don't foresee a huge slew of lawsuits in 2021 because people are getting coronavirus, especially with the vaccine out there. Because my argument back would be, well, hey, the vaccine was available. You say you got coronavirus, but you could have prevented it. It's like, whose responsibility is it? Yeah. No, I can't protect you if you're not going to protect yourself. Lawyer.
Yeah, I'm no lawyer, but I mean, wouldn't the burden of proof be on them to say, like, I got coronavirus at this event? Like, that seems like very difficult to prove, no?
Be very difficult to prove. They would have to prove that exact strand, and they only could have got it there. And the plaintiff has to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that there was actually some sort of negligence on your part that led to them getting it, because again, it's out there. And if I provide the CDC guidelines, if I provide cleaning protocols that are up to those levels and you get it, well, then I can say I did everything I could, and I'm not responsible for that because I did everything I could. I acted as an ordinary, reasonable, prudent person would and tried to protect you the best I can. but I can't protect you from everything. And that would also protect you from liability.
I'll also put this out there. Like, I know RJ, I know my company. And if there's an event that is negligent and is not taking their guests' health at like the highest priority, and the artist's health at high priority, and their crew, like we just won't work with them. It's just not really something that I think either of us want to even place our business or be a part of any, you know, kind of scenario that would get to that point. I don't think that that's such a big concern because of that reason for us.
And by the way, if there's an outbreak at an event and someone comes after you, who's to say that that person wasn't the one who started the outbreak? You would never know.
Yeah. Well, and that's why artists want us to indemnify them from any sort of COVID lawsuits, things like that, in these new clauses. And it's like, well, what if you bring it in? What if it's somebody on your bus that brings it in and gets everybody infected backstage?
Is Ticketmaster going to be able to track the vaccines like they're saying they're going to be able to?
So, interesting question. Obviously, that statement got stepped back pretty quickly when they said, hey, we're looking at doing this. But when it came out, it grabbed my attention, and I'm sure everyone's attention in the business, because that's what got me thinking about, is it our responsibility? Or if this becomes the industry standard where Ticketmaster works with Clear Health, you know, like Clear, the company that does your security screening at the airport, and Clear Health has a HIPAA compliant way to deal with LabCorp or whoever's doing the testing. So that way, all Clear Health does is it has access to Ticketmaster's backend, where it either verifies or does not verify a fan who has gone through the proper process of getting the vaccination or getting tested. That seems like a good HIPAA compliant way to verify that somebody's vaccinated. And it's not just gonna be our industry, it's gonna be the travel industry too. I remember it back in like April or May, there was talk about, hey, if there is a vaccine, are we going to have to get like a vaccine card in order to be able to travel around Europe or go places? So I don't think that's beyond the realm of reason. And it's not just going to be our industry. It's also going to be the service industry for hotels, for air travel, for a lot of different things.
The thing that, you know, as the marketer, I look at it through that lens, and man, what a marketing problem that this all is going to be, right? Where it's like, you may have the solution there, the vaccine might be there, but I think I saw a stat, something like only 40% of people actually will, you know, say that they want to take it. Mm-hmm. And the level of trust and the communication, and that, like, to be in that room, you know, that, not that, you know, who knows if there even is a room right now with, you know, but just the strategy around rolling this out in an effective and streamlined way from just the marketing standpoint of it. Just, wow, what an interesting campaign that's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and how do you message to half the country that says, don't even tell me to wear a mask, and now you're going to tell me I have to get vaccinated to do something? Oh. Yeah. That's not good. That's not our job as service providers to force people to do something they don't want to do. But the health departments could make it our job. And that's a real concern of mine heading into 2021. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, and I'm convinced that in 5 years, there's going to be a small group of people that still think COVID's happening. Like, even when the vaccine's done, there's going to be these COVID, you know, these people that think it's still going on, they're going to think we're all liars. Brian, your background is as a musician, as a drummer. Yeah. And I was watching this webinar that you gave last night. That was your business as a band, which I thought was really interesting. As a musician from a past life, do you think about, with all your marketing, because you market a lot of music stuff, but you market a lot of non-music stuff like the X Games or Uber or all, you know, all kinds of things. Do you always approach it from the point of view of a band or a musician and that background?
I wouldn't say always, but it definitely impacts, you know, kind of our approach, you know, having the experience of being the performer, right? And like, I mean, certainly on the music side, like there is no better experience than actually being on the road and being on a tour to then really understand what it's like to put on an event and you know, execute an event. So yeah, there's absolutely kind of that unique, I think, perspective that I do apply to our campaigns, because I've, you know, been on the other end of a lot of it. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, I think more importantly than just kind of my POV is it's the audience for that particular campaign. I mean, it's, you know, going, I guess, looping back to the storytelling stuff that we were talking about earlier, I always think, like, you know, marketing is storytelling, and if marketing is storytelling, then who are we telling our story to? And that's the most important thing out of everything, because when we really dig into who is the audience, then we can think about, you know, where are they spending their time? What are their likes, dislikes? You know, what really resonates with them? What is their discovery process, consideration process, decision process? I mean, it's all of that kind of stuff at the beginning of our campaigns. That's what really matters.
That's the important part.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the episode. Some of you may know that I run an industry newsletter called the Nashville Briefing. It really takes you to the front row of everything happening in Music City and the global music industry at large. So if you're interested in subscribing, go to nashvillebriefing.com to check it out. Okay, back to the show.
RJ, tell me a little bit about Don Romeo. I mean, was this guy like a classic just showbiz character? Like, when I was growing up, I remember kind of like reading about people like Frank Barcelona or like Don Law or like Jerry Weintraub, mm-hmm. kind of like idolizing these guys. Like, were you just totally just in awe of your grandfather, or was it kind of lost on you, or did you think he was like the coolest guy ever?
No, I absolutely thought he was the coolest guy, especially since I was bitten young by the show business bug. And yeah, he's always been an idol. But his story is pretty unique. Don't even have time to go into all of it. But I can just tell you, he served his country in the military. He was in the Special Services Division, which basically meant he was kind of with the band. And so he started, you know, working on USO shows. And then he was actually an entertainer and performer. He performed with a comedy trio that won a big award, like an what was the Star Search? It was like the Star Search of their time. And so, yeah, he was talented as an artist. And then when he came back to the States after Korea, that's when his partner got shut down by Jimmy Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa yanked his booking card because he wouldn't use union stagehands for a theatrical gig they were doing. And so, unbeknownst to my grandfather's partner, he went and met with Hoffa, who was in Council Bluffs, which is right across the river from Omaha, and tried to get his partner's booking license back. And didn't work. Hoffa said, I won't give it back to your partner, Paul Moorhead, but I'll give it to you. And so Grandpa went and told his partner what he had done, how he had tried to get his booking license back. And Paul Moorhead said, well, I guess there's just one thing you can do, and that's buy me out of the agency and start your own agency. Grandpa's like, I got two kids. I don't have the money to buy you out. So Paul Moorhead wrote him a check for what half the company was worth, gave it to him. Grandpa endorsed it, gave it back, and the Don Romeo Agency started in 1954.
Oh my god. And his claim to fame is really bringing national acts to fairs, right?
Yes,
did he realize that that was like, how did, do you know how that came together, or how he started doing that?
One of his first big things was actually bringing an ice skating show to fairs. So he was back in the vaudeville days, where you had all sorts of entertainers, right? Comedians. He would tell the story about the guy who would do the backflip after his show. He had Zippy the human chimp that he worked with, the water skiing squirrel. So it didn't start right away with, like, you know, the Johnny Cash's The World and people like that. It actually started with more the vaudeville acts. And there's a great story that I heard about when he brought an ice skating show to the Adams County Fair in Nebraska. So there's tons of those types of things. But yes, how he really became known in the country music world was by bringing the national acts to county and state fairs. and he kind of pioneered that model, pioneered some of the pricing models that we see today and things like that.
How cool is that? Unbelievable. And was he a big personality, or did he have like a showbiz swagger to him?
He definitely did. He always wore a suit. He was the gentleman, you know, a gentleman's gentleman. And he would just sit and tell stories for hours. I remember going to the like Nebraska Association of Fair Managers convention and sitting in the corner and just listening to him tell stories and hold court and people coming in and out just so they could hear the stories. And then someone would come in and that would generate another whole line of stories. It'll be like, when I worked with your father, it was and amazing, amazing times. And he was always the guy that could make you feel like the most important person in the room. That was a gift that he had. So I can't tell you how many times I've had people come up to me and say, your grandfather talked to me when no one else would, when he was at the top of his game, gave me an opportunity or told me where I could go to find an opportunity. And that's probably the most inspiring thing about his legacy is how many people he touched and still remember him to this day. Troy Bullhofer, who owns all the Country Thunders, said Grandpa was one of those guys that gave him the time of day when nobody knew who he was and, you know, gave him a shot at providing production for a small fair.
Don Romeo, how cool is that? So I'm excited to talk about this partnership, but Brian, so, I mean, you've worked with some unbelievable brands as a marketer, like the X Games, for example. Like, how'd you get involved marketing some work for the X Games?
So I was working with the Formula One racetrack down there, Circuit of the Americas. And this was a few years back, ESPN announced that they were kind of moving Summer X Games out of LA for pretty much the first time. And they opened it up. It was like Olympic style bidding. And they whittled it down to about four different locations. I think it was Chicago, Charlotte, Detroit, and Austin. And so because I was working with the track, that we were part of that. And it became just this insane. I mean, that was like, I lived and breathed that thing. I wanted that so, so badly. And I was just like day and night, you know, our campaign was we were just peppered, you know, not only fans and getting like people excited but you know, it was all for the judges at ESPN to kind of win them over. And I mean, the track is just an incredible facility, and they ended up putting on basically a mini X Games when the judges came to town. And we had, I mean, basically set up there on Sixth Street with the, you know, the big city hall in the background. You got guys on a half pipe, you got, you know, bands playing. I mean, it was epic to say the least, and we won, and we ended up winning that thing. And then, I mean, it was just like the greatest feeling in the world. I mean, that was, I think it was something like a estimated like $250 million impact on the city over a 3-year deal. Something along those lines. And then it was, you know, it dawns on you though, after you win this thing, you're like, well, shit, now I gotta do it.
Wait, but what did you show? Like, how are you showing, like what exactly did you win? Or how were you, like, what did you have that made you the winner?
They don't really reveal all the criteria. I mean, in part, you know, there's some perhaps backroom conversations, what have you, but it's, I mean, it really is truly like, you know, that you have all over the country. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with like a lot of the CVBs and cities. I mean, they've got dedicated departments to winning events for the town. I mean, that is their full-time gig. And so in part it's showing, you know, your hotel capacity and your, you know, just, I mean, our real job was more about kind of support from the audience, that they would actually sell tickets and live, you know, show them the dream that this is really what it's gonna be like. And in fact, it ended up being, so when we did it, they set massive attendance records. So it was, I think, the highest attended X Games in something like 13 or 14 years when we did it. So it was also, so couple other stories out of there. First, that was my introduction to esports. So they had a partnership with Major League Gaming, and they were a part of it. And so we developed in partnership with the guys, Nashville folks at Olympa, built the app for that event. And you would have this ability to like basically see the most popular athletes. And I'm just scrolling through this thing. And I'm like, who the hell are like the top 20 guys? And then you got Tony Hawk, like all the way at the bottom. And it's all these esports guys. And I'm like, holy hell, like this is something. Like this is a real, and you look at it now and it's like, I mean, flash forward, however, you know, whatever, 8-9 years, but I mean, esports is so far beyond in popularity what professional athletes are in your standard NBAs, NFLs kind of thing. It is unbelievable at how popular those guys are. But my other story, so there was kind of and hopefully they forgive me for sharing this, but it's an interesting story. So the way that the ticketing was set up was that everybody that bought, I think, a 3-day pass would also get GA lawn access to the shows. Because you got that, you weren't so incentivized to buy a bowl seat. So the bowl was relatively empty, where you had a line going through like a mile long to try to get into the lawn. And I think it may have been during the Kanye show. So Kanye headline, and maybe I have to think about it again, but anyways, they bum rushed the bowl. So I'm up there in the kind of the, suite with the owners next to me, the investors are next to me, and their face just goes white. And I'm just like, oh my God. I mean, they're just looking at, you know, how badly are we about to get sued and all this liability of people jumping down and fortunately, I mean, nobody really got seriously hurt. I mean, there was maybe a security guard that got pushed over or something like that, but it really, thankfully, the worst thing happened was, you know, a lot of people complaining that they had paid for those seats and now they were sitting next to a bunch of freeloaders kind of thing. So we, you know,
where's
that was
that
our
Corona outbreak.
Right. So our mission was, you know, mitigating all that fun with, you know, on real-time social media while we were kind of there on site managing that whole thing.
So, holy cow.
Crazy experience.
That is so cool to be a part of. So tell me about this new partnership, because this is really exciting. How do you guys come together on this? Like did someone approach the other with the idea for this marketing partnership, or what was the, like, how do you guys come together on this?
I mean, pretty organically in that we were kind of sharing clients in many ways already. And we just, you know, there's a lot of value in both of what we do that's very complementary. I don't know, RJ, I mean, is that kind of your take as well?
Yeah. I mean, I think like the first time I heard of you was probably when we were doing like some website exploring. And then I checked some of your credentials, things like that. But then, yeah, it was when we started working together. And the first event, I'll never forget, when we started working together, I was so impressed by the onboarding process, because, you know, there's other companies out there that we certainly work with that do digital marketing and social media management, things like that. But getting the client trained right from the beginning, making sure that everyone's on the same page, they really went above and beyond in that regard. And the onboarding process was great. And that's a key element, I think, for making any relationship work. And so when I saw that and then combined it with the quality of the work, it was like, okay, this is someone that we know we can trust to work with, to recommend to our clients, that can help us sell tickets for these concerts. Because at the end of the day, if we can take a show from doing okay to making money, that's great for everyone, because our client makes money. They keep booking shows. You know, they keep using Bauer because Bauer says, hey, look at, you had a 10X or 11X return on this promotion. So we all know we need marketing, but what people don't understand is that there really is a huge difference in people that truly understand how to get you the most bang for your buck in the digital realm. And I think Brian and his team understand that well. And so, yeah, we're proud to recommend them to our clients.
So how does this work? Like your clients, because there's all this, I printed it out right here. We've got, I mean, here are the headlines. We've got more sales, more savings, more efficiency, more insight. Who doesn't want this? So the Romeo Entertainment Group clients are basically going to have access to the Bauer services and be able to utilize them to a great degree, right? That's basically what we're talking about here.
Yeah, Brian, if you want to address.
Yeah, happy to. Yeah, so I mean, I echo what RJ was saying before. I mean, it's certainly the access to, you know, a company that has a proven track record of success in the space, right? Like, I think that we, you know, often hear of marketing companies, that feel as though they could market a show, but don't really have experience marketing a show. You know, it ain't selling toasters. You know, there is a full, deep, data-driven understanding about a ticket buyer's life cycle that is our bread and butter. I mean, we are in my opinion, but also from, you know, just again, our track record, I think the industry leader in understanding, you know, what does it take for a fan to discover a show, to actually, consider buying a ticket, the steps then required of them to put down their credit card and buy that ticket and then stick around longer and spend more. And it's that funnel, that cycle that we really understand. Like, these are perhaps the roadblocks getting in the way of that. These are things that are working well that, you know, could be great. These are things that aren't yet implemented that once established could you know, move the needle. So it's that kind of thing that I think that makes us particularly unique. I'll also throw in there that we also have a wide variety of clients that you were kind of mentioning before, that when we are working with, let's say, a sports team or, you know, a restaurant or just some other kind of vertical in entertainment, we're able to glean what is new, efficient, and effective and apply that to the festival and fair space and vice versa, right? So that becomes, I think, a kind of a competitive advantage for us. The other thing that the Remio clients get is, kind of access to, special pricing for our services as well. So there's, unique pricing, but not just from a kind of like a discount perspective, if you will, but we actually offer the opportunity for them to bake in a significant portion of our cost into the tickets. So it becomes kind of like a fee. It gets passed along to consumers. So they get, these event producers get kind of like this, this top tier marketing at a very affordable price because of that opportunity. And so that's that's something unique that they also get access to. And then beyond that as well, like the kind of just opportunity to gain insight. So we provide the clients kind of this quarterly report that not only from across Romeo Entertainment Group's clients, like what are the trends, what are the opportunities to generate more fan sales and profit, but specifically, specific ideas for these participating clients that we take a look at their analytics and we show them, again, these are maybe some roadblocks getting in the way of things. These are some improvements that you can make. These are things you're not yet doing. And so they get specific access to that consulting. We think it's a pretty dang cool package that we're really excited about.
Yes.
There you go. Mic drop. Nothing else needs to be said.
Mic drop. What is the, because, I know that there's, the statistic that I think it's something like for every person who buys a ticket, they're buying like three tickets, or it's like 2.7 tickets or something 2.7. Like that. 2.7. So you lose out on the information of two other ticket buyers or ticket fans who are coming to your show. And I think we've talked about this before, but how do you think about like grabbing those fans' informations and making sure they don't fly under the radar?
Yeah, no, that is a huge, huge part of what we do. There is so much power in owning the relationships between an event producer and a fan. And so we really encourage our clients to be actively doing things like contesting and promoting, for their newsletter and, you know, text message marketing, chatbot marketing, all of these opportunities to, you know, pull folks off of social, because we look at that as kind of renting fans from, you know, Facebook and Twitter and, you know, et cetera. Like, it's, they could change their policy tomorrow and you're out of that investment, you know, and they've already kind of, you know, gated that pretty significantly over the years. So yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities. I mean, we've had discussions with events for setting up gated Wi-Fi at the events, right? Where, you know, people have to kind of submit their information while they're on site. And so that's another way to capture data. I mean, there's such a whole host of stuff. I mean, from, especially in the fair and festival space, you get like pre-registration for wristbands and all that kind of stuff too, that there's a lot of different tactics that we use because we just know that it's super important.
I'm so interested in that. That's so cool. So RJ, when shows come back, and you know, you obviously go through a lot of acts, is this going to be like, are you going to be ambushed more than ever by acts trying to play shows who have not been playing shows for the past year? Like, do you think it's going to be overwhelming to sort through every single act that's going to be coming after you?
So I've seen some of the traffic reports for the big cities, and from June onward, maybe mostly from August onward, the industry is trying to pack a year and a half's worth of shows into like those 4 months. And if that happens, I don't believe it's going to be good for the industry, because you're going to have too many big shows on top of each other in these major markets. And you don't know what the economic fallout is yet from COVID, right? We really haven't felt it in the services industry, because the services, we haven't been able to provide the services. Good spending, I remember reading in the New York Times in the third quarter, was up 6.7%, and services spending was down 7.2%. So people were buying more goods because they weren't spending money going to shows, going to the theater, going to sports games. Is that money going to be there next year? Are they going to, you know, continue that trend? How much of the entertainment pie have we lost, and how quickly will it come back? Those are all questions that we're asking. And so, you know, we talked about it before some of our festivals went on sale this year for next year. You know, we had the line, I'll give you an example. So Twin City Summer Jam is a festival I book in Shakopee, Minnesota. We had 7,000 ticket holders hold over their tickets from 2020 to 2021. My theory was, we need to get out in front of the marketing that we believe is going to be coming for all these other shows. And we need to also, we have an obligation to reassure our fans and give them hope that, you know, this show's going to happen, and that they're not leaving their money with us in vain, right? So there's a message of hope, which I think a lot of people need right now. And once we knew the news was out there about the vaccine and the emergency use authorization, I'm like, that's all I need. We know a vaccine's coming. That's going to change consumer sentiment. People are hopeful that we're going to have a somewhat normal summer. So let's give them that hope. Release the lineup. That then also tells the people, the 7,000 people who held over with us, that they've got exactly what they know they're looking forward to. And it gets us out ahead of any major shows that might get announced that might be on top of us or around us in those markets. So it's not right for every market to do that. And certainly some people view it as insensitive to be advertising or selling tickets. But that's generally not the sentiment I've seen. And I guess I would defer to Brian because he's in the trenches on that right now, dealing with that. What I haven't seen as much blowback on social media as I thought we would. But I think that's also because we're telling the message the way I just said, which is, hey, we want to give you hope. We're hoping this happens. You're hoping this happens. Let's all look forward to better days.
Well, before I definitely want to respond to that. Before I forget, I just want to highlight for on the Romeo side of things, I mean, there is like so much credit for trying to even book artists during all of this. I mean, there is just like, I can't even tell you how challenging that must be. Like the the level of confidence and winning over an artist just to like come to the table to even hear an offer, it must be just immense. I know that that has definitely been probably a crazy experience that I would love to hear more about from you during all of this. But yeah, from our side of things on with marketing, it's weird, all these event. I mean, we went through this awful period of just cancellation, postponement, our mission was really just to mitigate, and try to keep as much cash on hand for our clients as possible and coach them through that process as best we could. But all these events that have postponed, like they're not just sitting around, which is kind of nice for us in a way, because they do have an event in maybe perhaps later of 2021, but it gives us this much longer runway than we are used to. Because I will tell you, it is not a stretch to get the call that, hey, we've got an event next month. What can you do to help us out here? Or even maybe shorter than a month. But, it really does give us the opportunity to properly market some of these events, which I don't think that many event producers don't necessarily understand, like how much time really truly is required to strategize and build and then implement. It's kind of really focused just on the implementation portion. There's a lot that goes into it. It's very front heavy to get a marketing campaign off the ground. So that's been almost a blessing for us in a way, because we're able to be more effective essentially for our clients. It's still a battle, because we're fighting against a populace that has been trained to just assume that an event is not going to happen, that it's just been canceled.
Right.
And so we have to put in more touch points than ever. It's trust is the name of the game. More than anything, we have to be projecting, confidence and just safety and reassurance that not only is this event, going to happen, but you'll be safe if it happens, and that you'll have a great time, right? And RJ, we were talking about this earlier, where it's like presenting a message about a vaccine is a scary message, and pairing that with you're gonna have a great time at this festival or fair or whatever is like kind of contradictory in a way. Like, you don't want them to think about the scariness of it, but at the same point, you need them to think about like that there's, an element to that. So it's a challenge, man. I mean, there's no question. And everybody is different, and you're gonna perceive it a little bit differently. But, ultimately I do think that there is, a path forward, and we're already seeing. So for instance, Country Jam is a client that, REG and Byron Jam Marketing that we're working with, that they recently went on sale. We're getting a 10x, 11x return right now for them. And they're thrilled, because they really, they really honestly thought that it might be crickets, that they just weren't gonna be selling. And this is in Wisconsin. I mean, Wisconsin's really not having a good COVID experience right now. And so ultimately the demand is there, and the demand is, and that's really, I think, what's gonna give everybody a lot of hope here going forward.
Roaring 20s, hopefully, is what we're we're going into on the live entertainment side. RJ, I mean, it was announced last year you were taking over the company. I'm sure there's a lot of pressure there to make old Don proud, looking down. And now we're going through the hardest thing for live entertainment, like in history, basically. I mean, what has it been like going through this time? I mean, I'm sure it's been crazy, right? Has it been crazier than normal year, or because you're booking less shows, has it been a little less crazy, or give us a little insight here?
Well, it's been incredibly difficult, because we had several team members that we had to let go, like a lot of people in our business, because there's no revenues coming in. So you had people that had been with the company for 20 years that you had to let go. We kept a core team to be able to provide the quality of service that we still want to provide to our clients. And that team's been kicking ass. We've been working really hard, and it sucks having to redo the work. that you did right the first time, right? And the good news is a lot of the stuff we've been able to pick up and just rebook for 2020. The issue there is, you know, what if there's a capacity reduction? So if you go in and you negotiate a deal to reduce capacity, you're fighting with one hand tied behind your back, right? Why is the artist going to confirm when they're like, well, this guy's offering me, you know, more money, but at full capacity? So the artist is going to take that offer at full capacity. And so people have been asking me, well, is that smart to negotiate at full capacity versus reduced capacity? I'm like, look, if you're summer of 2021, I think you have to negotiate at full capacity. Otherwise you can't even play the game or make a really attractive offer for a lot of these artists. So to Brian's point, that's been one of the more frustrating things about booking for 2021 or rebooking a lot of stuff is, you know, we don't know where the capacities are going to be. And will these artists and agencies work with you if you're at a 50% capacity? The general consensus from people I talk to is these artists are going to need to make money next year too. And if we're at reduced capacities across the board, they're going to have to renegotiate their fees. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to work either. So I think the industry as a whole really has that mentality of we're all in this together. We're going to sink or swim together, because if we don't have shows at scale next year, or if we have bans on mass gatherings, our industry is going to be devastated. It was already devastated this year. I'm sure you guys know, like I do, tons of friends who overnight their income was shut off, right?
Of course.
It's been rough. So to your question, taking over and then heading right into the greatest challenge we've ever faced in the 66 years we've been in business, I felt a ton of pressure to lead the company the best way I knew how through what's been the most difficult challenge we've ever faced. And I couldn't have done it without the management team around me. And we're going to get through it. We're going to come out stronger on the other side. But it's been a huge challenge.
I know you're the man for the job. Are you worried about, I mean, I know the answer is yes, but I was just reading that if the independent venues in NEVA, if they don't get some kind of bailout from Congress, that 90% of them are going to have to close, which was insane to read. I think I read that in the New York Times. Does that sound right? Or I mean, that's going to be devastating also, right? Of course.
Yeah. And NEVA was saying that back in July and August, and here we now sit in December and the HEROES Act never passed. You know, there's some talk of parts of it possibly being in this next stimulus, but you know, they were ringing the alarm bells, like I said, back then. So I don't know how many have gone out of business, but NEVA said a significant amount were. And yes, that would be very detrimental to the development of new artists, those baby artists that aren't getting offered the tour plays, the big tour plays. That's going to be rough. I don't want to say it's a silver lining, because I feel horrible for those venue owners who, through no fault of their own, you know, are being put out of business. But fairs used to be the proving ground for a lot of these young artists, right? That's where they would go and have to come up with a headlining set, build their own fan base, and do their own thing. Whereas when you're on tour and you've got a 20, 30 minute set, the fans aren't necessarily yours that are there, and you're not necessarily making a lot of new fans because they're probably there to see the headliner. So getting back to that model where we can maybe play a bigger role in the development of these baby artists, I could see that being very beneficial to fairs and festivals. I hate that it's at the expense of, you know, these venues that might not come back, but I believe eventually they will, because there's no shortage of demand for music. Music is part of our lives. It's, you know, embedded into our lives. And that's not going to change. What's going to change is the timetable for resurrecting some of these economically compromised, you know, areas.
Right. I've been saying, look, they've been performing live since ancient Greece. They've gone through a lot worse than this. It's definitely not going away. It's just, what's it going to look like when it returns? Guys, yeah. have we said it all? Have we left anything unsaid? What have we not covered here in our last couple minutes?
Well, I mean, I'll just kind of offshoot what RJ was talking about with his experience and just and maybe it's silver lining of me, but like, yeah, there, I mean, there are just, it just breaks my heart to see all of these, you know, friends, because that's, I mean, you know, this industry, it's a lifestyle business, and these are my friends who are, you know, now out of a job, and because it's a lifestyle industry, it's very much their identity, and it's just, it's heartbreaking. But what I'm finding, at least a little bit of solace in, is those that then start their own thing out of this, right? And there already are so many exciting and innovative and just impressive businesses that are coming out of this.
Yeah.
That is just very, very compelling for me as a business owner. I can't get more excited about. And if anybody's listening to this, or, you know, whatever, and they're on the fence about, hey, you know, I'm, you know, applying for all these jobs, I'm not hearing back, whatever. It's like, if you have that concept, or if you, whatever, I mean, I am happy to talk to you about it and help you, because I've been through it. And, you know, anything I can do to help spur more, you know, business growth and entrepreneurship, I am a massive advocate of. And so, yeah, again, as I see that as a byproduct of all this, it brings me hope. It brings me, a little bit of solace.
Yeah. Innovation's the mother of necessity. And there have been a lot of people who've had to, you know, provide for their families and had to come up with a different way to do it. You know, the virtual shows, I wonder if those will stick around after, you know, after
you guys COVID. Were kind of tapping into that a little bit early on, right? Like, I remember you guys were kind of doing like was it daily you guys were live streaming, or weekly, or?
Yeah, we were one of the first ones, because, you know, I saw it coming. And so it's like, let's get this thing launched. And we did it within 48 hours. We created the REG Couch Concert Series. Yeah. And it was great. I mean, big success in terms of driving people, but, you know, it just came from a love of the music, and hey, we just want to provide content and some positivity for people in the early days of the pandemic. But now it's advanced so much further, right? People are, they transformed their homes and created studios. I think Don Felder's got like a 6-camera setup that he'll do these live virtuals, and the money isn't bad. I mean, I just confirmed an artist for a private event for $15,000, and maybe she's going to have to perform for 30 minutes virtually from home. I mean, that's not
like some of these.
What's that?
Well, the BTS show obviously was insane. I was talking with someone who was saying that Sturgill, when he did the live stream at the Ryman, made more on that than he would have if he played an arena live streaming at the Ryman. Yeah. By the time ticket sales and merch sales were done, he grossed more on that than he would have grossed in an arena, which is crazy. Obviously you can't do it. You can't do it every night and tour around, because you dry up pretty quick. But yeah, it's crazy.
Well, yeah, but there is technology now, and that you can geo target. So you can provide kind of those, you know, the radius clause kind of experience.
People are doing that. Like Todd Rundgren just announced that he was doing that. Youngblood is doing, like, people are doing, to me, that's kind of, like, is that a hoax, or is that kind of a good idea?
You know, where I think it's going to make the most sense is when there's actual live touring back, and you want to add a supplemental ticket. Perhaps if the show's sold out, now that even people in that area can still, you know, experience it to some degree, and you're not, you know, basically cannibalizing your other events. I think that's where it makes, you know, probably the most sense. But yeah, I mean, we've been doing a lot of live stream promotion. We did John Cleese's first ever live stream, which was
that's so
very
cool,
very fun. Yeah,
the comedian. You know,
yes. Yeah. Yep.
That's so
Monty,
cool.
Monty Python man himself. Yeah. No,
yeah. Good. I love Monty Python, the quest for the Holy Grail.
How good is that?
it was very interesting. The, so actually for that show, it was originally supposed to be in Canada. And they got so the promoter for it got, you know, a venue and everything. And then the government would not let him in. And so they had to, like, 3 days before the event was supposed to happen, they found a place in London for him to do it out of. So it was, thankfully I wasn't on the actual, you know, promotion or production side of that. But yeah, well, you know, the whole live streaming thing, there is serious money to be made. But I, you know, I just also see it as, you know, there is a future with it. I think it's just going to be complementary to the live stuff as I think about what 2021 and beyond looks like.
I love it, yeah, guys.
There's no. I was just going to say there's no substitute for the visceral experience and, you know, being with like-minded fans and partying out under the stars, right, in an outdoor venue. So there's until virtual reality reaches, you know, those peaks and can create the sensory experiences, I'm pretty confident our business is going to be all right once we rebound from this.
And with the live streams, it's access and it's control. That's the stuff that people will pay money for. If it's like a YouTube video, then like what's the point,
right?
Like,
right.
And that's where I think a lot of live stream production misses the mark. It's like you want to be able to control the angles of the video, or you want to be in the green room before the show and you know, have a Q&A and like all that kind of stuff. Like, that's interesting. That's compelling. But you know. Yeah, nothing will ever replace a live concert. Nothing.
Right, of course. Have you been watching Homeschool that they've been doing? Like the School Night in LA, which is the showcase they do out there. And Tom Windash is curating it. And every week he does this live stream called Homeschool. He's got three acts on. And they're always like all over the world. And they play like 15 minutes. And they're unbelievable. And they're always playing in like weird places. Like they'll be on like a boat, or they'll be like in the middle of a field playing live. It's always these unknown acts that you've never heard of, and he does such a good job curating it. That's always like three of the, like, you're convinced each act could be the next like superstar act. That's been my favorite, pretty much the only live stream shows that I've been watching is this like weekly Homeschool series. That's my recommendation.
Send me the link for that. I'd be interested.
I will. Yeah. They've been there. There was one last week, this artist Onar was playing that I'd never heard of before. He just signed with Warner, I guess. He was in the middle of a field, and I watched it live, and I thought it was so incredible that I like rewatched it as soon as it ended because I was like blown away by it. I'll send you the link to it. Guys, this has been fun. RJ Romeo, Brian Bauer, thanks for coming on. Thanks for taking the time. We've got an exciting new partnership that is just starting, and I know that when concerts get back, this thing's going to be ripping and roaring. RJ, one of the first people who met with me in town, decided to meet with me over a cold email. Always appreciative, always grateful.
I think I offered you a job after that, didn't I?
Did you? I think when they're talking,
I think I was looking for an assistant, wasn't I?
I think that might have been true. Did I turn you down? Oh God,
you did. But look, you've gone on to bigger and better things. Thank you for hosting this. Thank you for the invite to be on it, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excited for what we have in store for us for the future.
Sir.
Absolutely. Yeah,
Zach, thank you.
Absolutely. Stay well out there, guys. Look, 3 o'clock, right on 3 o'clock. And by the way, RJ gave me shit when we turned on for not shaving, but I noticed he didn't give Brian any crap for not shaving. I'm just saying, might be a double standard there, but
he had the beard. He had the beard long before you.
He had the beard long before me. Fair enough. Guys, stay well out there and talk to you all soon.
All right, guys. See ya.
See ya.
There you have it, RJ Romeo and Brian Bauer. They've got this brand new partnership. I can't wait to see where it continues to go. And thanks for coming on the show, guys. That was a blast. Thanks for tuning in as well. If you're a listener and you're listening in, as probably everyone is right now, thanks for doing that. We appreciate you. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to my newsletter at nashvillebriefing.com. Or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Bye.